Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Way is Wild podcast. We are your hosts, Blake and Joy Ligon. Each week, our goal is to equip and inspire each other to follow the wild way of Jesus. So join us as we discover together how we can follow Jesus into the wild.
Question for you.
What is something dumb you did in college?
I know it'll be hard to choose. What are you gonna pick is what I'm gonna ask.
Oh my gracious. So we don't prep for these questions.
Clearly.
Typically. So they are
if y'all haven't been able to tell, we don't.
No, not at all. One of the dumbest things that I did, and there is a lot.
There's a lot.
There really is. But one of the dumbest things I did was college is when I really got into mountain biking, and there was a time where I was getting used to clip-in pedals, which are pedals that you actually clip
into. I was hoping you would share was the story I was thinking of.
Hoping. You were begging me for this.
Well, story. If you weren't going to tell it, then I would. So
I was just going to interrupt you. So clip-in pedals are, you know, there's a cleat on your shoe, and then it clips into the pedals, and it's actually better to do... To ride a bike that way, you have more control over the bike. But the downside is you can't just take your foot off the pedal. So I was learning how to use clip-in pedals with my mountain bike, and so I went around campus and was riding around, practicing these clip-in pedals. And I saw you pretty early on, and we were dating. I thought we were engaged or dating.
Oh, I think we're still dating.
Okay, and you told me very clearly. Hey, you don't need to be riding your bike without a helmet. Mm-hmm. And here I was, a college football player, and did not need a second mother. And I just thought, I'll do whatever I want to do.
But why? Why do you?
Well, okay. So, quick backstory is
why would I be so? I want you to wear a helmet
because my football career was ended. Before its time, because I got too many concussions.
Right. And I can remember Dr. Cluck, shout out to Dr. Cluck, mm-hmm. telling you have to wear your helmet.
Yes.
You have to not get another concussion.
Yes. So in my pride and arrogance and youthfulness.
Immaturity.
Yes. Okay, get that little dig in there. I decided I'm just riding a bike. It's not a big deal. We're just cruising. We're not really like doing anything crazy. So I'm fine. Well, I didn't put on my helmet. I did not heed my girlfriend's advice. And we were riding around, and I hopped up onto like a curb, like a 3 to 4 inch wide curb, you know, to just be goofy. And I was going probably 20, 22 miles an hour because I was coming down a hill. I hopped up on this curb and showed out in front of my friends, and my front tire went one direction, my back tire went another direction, and I catapulted off that bike when that moment happened and slammed onto the asphalt and hitting none other than my head.
Were you not still clipped in?
Oh, yeah, I was clipped in. I couldn't clip out.
Oh, okay.
But it wouldn't have mattered. Clipped in or clipped out, I was hitting that asphalt
right,
hard.
Right, right. I was trying to visualize it because I thought you were still clipped in because you didn't know how to get out. So I was envisioning.
No, I just slammed onto the concrete and gapped my head open substantially. And we went to the cafeteria where you were, and I was like, hey, had an accident, and I had blood coming down my face.
Bad. Awful. Your friends was like, we'll take him to the hospital. It'll be okay.
Yes.
To get stitches.
And you had zero compassion for me, by the way, because your only question was, were you wearing a helmet? And I was
clearly you weren't. Your head was gashed open. I don't know why I had to ask. But I think I just remember being like, come on, man.
What is wrong with you?
Why like, you just got told not to wear a helmet. And you said, we were just riding around campus. And I was like, well, that didn't end well.
Yeah,
and so then that was during the time period of those, like, was it a Razor phone?
Generation 1 picture phones. Yes.
Yeah. And I remember a friend of ours text me this, you know,
faded out, barely
pixelated picture and said, see, he's okay. And it was a picture of you getting a staple.
Not a staple, five staples in my head.
But the guy was like stapling. I was like, what in the world? He's
and I shaved a huge like bald spot in my head to put these staples in. I look like Frankenstein when they were finished. And they were like, see, he's fine.
He's okay.
And it was not good.
Yeah. But here we are.
You know what's funny is I got those staples. So I carried on because I got those staples out like 2 or 3 weeks later, whenever it was, in Moab, Utah, on a mountain biking trip. So like,
who took them out?
I forged ahead. Blake Duffield or one of them. They had a little tweezer type thing, and it just
stop it.
Yep, pulls them right out.
Mm-hmm. Was that what they told you to do?
Yeah.
I don't believe
they
it.
They gave me a little tool, yes. To
they told to you out. That yes. A friend could take out your yes, staples. Yes,
they said anybody can take these out. It really was a simple process, but they did. They pulled those staples out of my head.
Okay.
On a mountain bike trip. I forged ahead.
Well, that is a whole situation.
It is a whole situation. I've never told that story before, like in a sermon or anything. But the reason I tell it is whenever you get around people that you went to college with, especially now with like children and responsibilities and professional jobs,
maturity,
it's either really great to be around those college friends or it's dangerous because they know a lot of your dumb stories.
Yeah.
And we both made some dumb decisions in college. And so,
but today we have our friends from college,
yes.
Jonathan and Brooke Hayes, and well, we didn't have to discuss any of those dumb decisions because we have all matured so greatly.
we have arrived since our OBU days.
Yes, but it was a great conversation about adoption.
Yeah.
And their story of their family and adopting their son Wyatt from China. And it's just really neat to see how the Lord can use people from college our college days to just make an impact in people's lives. And so we're just so proud of Brooke and Jonathan and their story, and you'll hear a lot from them today about their calling to adopt and the story of Wyatt and just what the Lord's taught them. And it was really good.
Just the risk that they were willing to take. There's some marriage principles tucked into there in the midst of that journey that they share with us. And so there's a lot of both inspiring and equipping truth for us to hear from Brooke and Jonathan. So we're excited to have them today, and we're excited that you guys get to join us on this conversation.
Brooke and Jonathan on our podcast today. What is up, friends?
Hi, guys.
Hi, friends.
Hello.
So, Brooke and Jonathan and we go way back.
OGs together.
Yes, our OBU days.
I was just telling a fun joy story the other day, but we'll talk about that later.
I feel like we should talk about it now.
We should not. I don't know what's about to come out of her mouth, so I'm like...
Your feet washing habit. I was discussing your feet
washing
habit.
I still do that.
You know, she did that this morning. I drove in from dropping the kids off, and I walked into our bathroom, and a very familiar scene was taken.
I was reading my Bible and washing my feet.
When did you start that, by the way?
In college. Was it my sophomore or junior year?
Huh.
I think it was sophomore, because I can only remember Joy washing feet. So
was it sophomore?
Washes her own feet.
I feel like we need to like explain this, because people are going to be like, why does Joy wash her feet? Does she stink? Like, I don't understand. I was not a great test taker in college or in life, and didn't just learn that in college, but I learned that when I hear a consistent sound in the background while I'm reading something or studying, my comprehension level goes up. And so sometimes I had to sit on the edge of the bathtub and just kind of run the warm water, hot water over my feet to hear the consistent water flow to help me comprehend better.
Well, and it's not warm water. It is scalding hot water.
Sanitation.
Like when she gets done, it's like, this is the most sterile thing in our house right now is your feet. It sounds bright, lobster red when she finishes. So
it's true.
I love it. But it does. You really concentrate when that happens. Because like I'll try to talk to you when the water's running.
And I'm like, not right now.
If the water's running, your mouth doesn't need to be. So
Brooke and Jonathan, why don't you right now share with us what is going on in your lives right now?
Well, we are busy parents to three, so I know you guys can relate to that. Mm-hmm. Our life is right now consumed in fall right now, going to volleyball and soccer games, and which is really fun. Mm-hmm. Our youngest is very involved in soccer. Our oldest is trying out this volleyball thing. And Wyatt is in the middle of the two, and he doesn't play soccer until spring. So he is just along for the ride right now. And yeah, that's kind of his personality. He's go along with whatever mess we're into. We both are working full time and stay really busy with that. And then we had been volunteering with youth ministry, and a couple of months ago, our church was going through a season and needed an interim. And so I am serving as our church's youth interim right now. So
let's go.
We're very consumed with what crazy games can we think of for a Wednesday night? Or tonight we're having a glow party, fifth quarter. It's going to be fun.
We also celebrated 15 years of marriage last week.
Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah. That's exciting.
That's awesome. Okay, so I have a question about what you just shared. What type of volleyball parents are y'all? Are y'all the sit in the stand, just observe, we don't really raise our voice, like we're just here to have fun and watch our kid? Or is it like, are you like Leanne Tui? Who is it? What's her name?
Yeah, I think that
the
was
the Blindside mom and dad, like y'all are all over it.
Yeah, I'm pretty quiet. I don't get too riled up about it. I kind of sit back and watch.
I actually just took a picture of him and another dad the other week because they were just like chilled, last row, loud back in the stands. And I'm like on the edge of my seat the whole time, like coaching from the stands.
Yes.
So we're kind of polar opposites in that.
That is so fun. Wow. Well, y'all sound pretty like
relaxed,
not that's busy at all.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, go ahead. You mentioned Wyatt, and I would love for you to share the story about Wyatt.
Yes. Well, it kind of culminates a lot of things when we talk about Wyatt and kind of, we'll later, I'm sure, share a little bit about what led us into adoption. But Wyatt was born in China. He had lived in an orphanage since pretty much birth. And then he came home to our family when he was 4 and a half. We didn't know a whole lot about him. We had very little medical records. We definitely knew that he had some medical issues going on, and had some suspicions about what those would be, but he didn't have a formal diagnosis or anything like that. And I just fell in love with him the first time I saw him.
Take us back to before you ever laid eyes on him. Yeah. How did the Lord take you guys through that process to prepare you, inspire and prepare you to take that step?
The winter break of our freshman year of college, I was home for Christmas break, and my dad had asked me if I wanted to go to a Stephen Curtis Chapman concert with him. Our church had some extra tickets, and I was like, sure, that would be great. So we went to a Stephen Curtis Chapman concert, and I had known a little bit about his story. But right after that, like a little intermission, and then right as he started back, he sat down on a piano and just shared his family's adoption story. And then he sang the song When Love Takes You In. And by the end, I'm bawling. I'm looking at my dad, and I'm like, we've got to go adopt a baby. And he's like, I have a kid in college. You are crazy. And I don't know what you're talking about. And so about 2 months after that concert, he called me with my mom and they said, hey, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I'm watching I literally remember this. I was like, I'm watching the OC. What do you want? I like,
don't interrupt me.
And he said, well, your mom's having a baby. And I like was like, ah, you're hilarious. And he was like, no, for real, we're adding to our family and we want you to come home and we need to talk through all this and stuff. So they shared with me that they had been to the adoption agency that day and started paperwork to adopt from China. And basically, my dad said that he had been running from God for the last 2 years and not two years, sorry, 2 months. And then through that, when he kind of approached my mom and thought she would be like, "You're crazy," my mom had been like, "I've been praying about this for a really long time and just thought you would think I was crazy." So they started the process of adopting.
I didn't really have a lot of, knowledge or experience like in the adoption, I guess, process, and especially not international adoption, until when Brooke and I started dating in college. That was about the time that her parents were going through the process of adopting Abby. And so I got to see, that process through them. And, I was there when she came home. So it was a cool experience to see. And so that was kind of my first, introduction into like that process, and especially, like I said, international adoption.
And God had just always put adoption on my heart. I had two cousins that were domestically adopted. And so when we started having serious relationship talks about like, hey, are we in this for the long haul? Are we going to get married and whatnot? You know, one of the things I told him was like, I feel like the Lord has led me to adopt one day, and I don't know what that looks like, but I need to know that that's something you're on board with. And he was very open, a little apprehensive, because I said, I had had a lot of experience with adoption. He had not, but, you know, we definitely wanted to keep that on our radar. And I think we both kind of thought that, you know, we'd try to have kids on our own, and then we would just let that door open when God wanted it to. But we kind of, in the back of our mind, I think, always thought it would be later in life, kind of like my parents, like, we'll get our own kids raised and then we're going to kind of start over and go through the adoption process. But the Lord had other plans.
Yeah, I was definitely open to it. I think I just didn't know a lot about the process and everything that goes into it.
So fast forward to, my sister came home when she was 18 months old, and we have a huge age gap, but we are super close. And she always jokes she has two moms in her life. and then some good friends of ours also ended up adopting from China. And we got to see them bring their son home, and they were very instrumental in our life. And through that, that same friend knew my heart for adoption, and she added me to a Facebook group that advocated for kids in China. And one day I was scrolling, and of course I'd see adorable kids on there all the time and be like, "Jonathan, look at this kid. But one day I saw Wyatt, and it was the Lord speaking to me in the most, without having a megaphone and yelling at me and bopping me over the head. It was just like, I know I'm looking at my son. I was terrified. We had Schaefer was a little bit over a year. And then, Paisley was probably, almost four at the time. And so I was like, oh my goodness, this doesn't make sense. You know, if you look at what experts say, you're not supposed to mess up birth order. We were going to mess up birth order. He was 3 and a half at the time when I first saw his picture. And so I was like, well, Jonathan is going to think I am crazy. And so I really wrestled with it for a little bit, didn't say anything to him. And my mom and I attended a women's conference at the church that we used to attend, and Joe Saxton was speaking. And in that, she talked a lot about ministry, and specifically about how ministry doesn't look the same for everyone, and that sometimes it's just ministering in your own home. And in that moment, I knew that so much of my ministry is being a mom, and God just said, you're supposed to be a mom to Wyatt too. And I left there bawling. My mom's like, what is going on? I hadn't told her any of this that I'd been wrestling with. I kind of unloaded on her in the car, and she's like, well, you've got to talk to Jonathan about all this.
That's a good next step.
Yeah, I walked straight in from the house, went straight to him. He could tell I'd been crying. And then I think I just unloaded on you at the time.
Yeah. So when she told me, of course, I was a little surprised, I guess, just I think because we had talked about it, but I think we both kind of in the back of our minds, like she said earlier, just thought, you know, that might be something later on in life, you know, that we end up doing. But like she was saying, we had two, you know, young kids, and adding a third, you know, was not something really, you know, that was, I guess, that we had talked about, you know, at that time. So I was a little surprised, but, and then financially, I think we were at a point to where I think we needed to really pray through that and figure out some things. And, you know, so I think it was probably 2 weeks later through praying and really seeking God's will through that, I felt like that it was really something that he was calling both of us to do. And I kind of gave, you know, the financial aspect of it to him and said, Lord, if you want us to do this and you're going to work it out, and, you know, we shouldn't be worried about that part of it.
And I kind of told him, I was like, you just pray about it. Don't say anything. Just you pray about it. You ask me questions when you want to ask me questions, but I'm leaving the ball in your court. And I'll never forget one of those Sundays at church, they were doing like a push to adopt a compassion child. And I kind of looked at him and he goes, yeah, we're not doing that. We're about to adopt a kid. And I was like, the first time he told me like that he was really considering it. And I was like, oh, okay. God's working.
Man, so. When you were talking, Jonathan, and you talked about the financial part, you know, I'm just like listening to your stories. I can remember, Brooke, when your sister came home in college and all of your college friends, like, I just remember we were all celebrating that. And then just walking through your story, but now y'all are married, you know, you go from college age kids to like, oh, now we're grown people with mortgages or whatever, you know, finances that, you know, that's a stressor. And so when you said that, like, I think that's a lot of times also what guys think through is the financial part. I'm sure just like logistically, how is this going to work?
No, I think you're supposed to.
Yeah. I think just personality wise, you know, that's, I guess, kind of one of my character traits, how I'm kind of made up, as I, you know, think through things financially. And not this to say Brooke doesn't, but I guess I put more weight into that.
It's one way we compliment each other.
No, yeah. Like,
I'm the dreamer and like, let's dream and do all this, and we kind of balance each other in that way. He's like, let me be the realist here and introduce a little balance to your dreamer.
Well, I think that's why it hit me, because I'm a realist. And so when you said the finances, it resonated with me, because for me, I was like, oh yeah, like the Lord's calling you guys to this, but like, how is this going to happen? You know, like, it's going to have to be total trust in the Lord, that if he's called us to it, he's going to equip us and he's going to provide. But yeah, when you said that, it just kind of resonated with me.
Well, yeah, because I'm assuming, and you guys will probably get into this here in a second, but it's not just the initial costs, which we've heard are pretty substantial for a young couple with kids, but also then it's like, you have to keep the kid alive. You know, there's another financial piece to that
like
that
it's ongoing.
It's ongoing. Yeah, it definitely doesn't stop. But I think one thing that I want to highlight, Brooke, that I thought was really powerful, more for your side of this calling, was that obviously you were extremely passionate and had a clear calling from God about this, but you didn't push it. And I think sometimes you gave Jonathan space to just deal with it. And I think that's like a powerful marriage principle, whether it's like a calling to be adopted or to adopt, or it's just life,
a job change, or anything,
whatever. I think sometimes we try to play the Holy Spirit. Well, if God's calling me to this, he has to be calling you to this, so you need to get on board. And that's not the best way. You know, there's one Holy Spirit and we are not them. Mm-hmm. And so that was that's a really powerful principle. I think that regardless of people listening, if they're, you know, going to adopt or that's not in their story, that's a powerful principle to say, hey, if God's calling you to something and your spouse isn't there yet, just let God deal with them. And it may take 2 weeks, it may take 2 months or 20 years, but just back off and let the Spirit do their work. And so I commend you guys for that, because my question was about to be, did that cause tension between you guys where you're like, hey, let's go. What are you dragging your feet on? And Jonathan, you're like, hold on, you got to, you know, so like it caused tension.
And I'll say during that time that I gave him space while he was praying through it and kind of doing his own research and his own processing of it, I was having to pray, like, Lord, if this is not your will, let me be at peace with this. Like, give me the peace to step away from the situation if this is not what's meant for our family and not what Jonathan's okay with. And so that was hard. That was really hard.
Yeah, I think I was probably more prepared, I guess, than probably what I realized. It was just kind of the timing. It was just, like I said, we hadn't discussed that, you know, so early in our marriage, or so, you know, early with younger other children. And so I think it just kind of took a little bit of time to, I guess, pray through that and just realize that, you know, I think that I, you know, really was, you know, ready for that step. And so it just took a little bit of time to, I guess, realize that.
I giggled because I thought about how y'all had talked about this. Y'all knew at some point in your marriage you were going to adopt. But I just giggled imagining Brooke coming home from this conference, bawling her eyes out, and Jonathan's like weed eating or something. And it's like, okay. Okay. You left and then you came back and now we're talking about this. Okay.
Now so we're not our kid. Like, whoa.
Yeah. Okay. Here we are. So y'all finally, so you got on the same page. You agreed the Lord was calling you to adopt specifically Wyatt.
Yes.
So at this point, what are some obstacles moving forward that y'all had to navigate to adopt him?
Well, financially, we've already talked about that a little bit. That was the biggest hurdle. I think we were terrified of that. And I'll probably reference throughout our story a lot of God winks. We had the church we were going to at the time was just very encouraging of adoption. And they had a huge adoption ministry. And they had like some classes you could go to on Sunday nights, kind of discover classes. And we actually had gone to an adoption class, just knowing that that was something on our radar. And some people in our church, they had several couples up there that were speaking. One was like more foster care. One was had adopted internationally, several children. And I remember one of the things she said was that at one point they agreed to adopt and they had less than $1,000 in their bank account. And they said, Lord, how in the world are you calling us to do this? And she said, and over again, God provided. And that stuck with me. And when we were talking about the financial aspect, that was like, I think both of our prayer, like when we started praying specifically for Wyatt, was, Lord, this is a huge number we're looking at, but God, if you want this to happen, you will make a way. And he kept showing up over and over again. And we'll talk more about that. But I think that was the biggest hurdle.
Yeah. The paperwork, I guess, to kind of go through that process is pretty substantial. And then you kind of have a time frame in which you have to get your paperwork in to apply. So that was a part that was a little bit, I wouldn't say hectic, but I guess it was a part that was, you know, kind of took some time to try to get that done.
I was going to say specifically for him. So we kind of worked backwards in the adoption process. Normally people are like, okay, I want to adopt. Like, we're going to start this process and then, you know, be matched with a child later on. Like, that was my parents' story. Or, you know, if people that adopt here domestically, you know, there's different ways they go about that, or even in the foster care system. And so for us, we were kind of working backwards. We're like, this is the child that we feel like the Lord's called us to. Now we're going to work backwards, like on the paperwork. Well, when we first reached out to the agency that had his file at the time, they were like, okay, well, we're gonna have to move pretty quick because if he's not matched with a family, his file is going to Canada because it had circulated through several adoption agencies in the United States. And so that was kind of nerve wracking because we had to do at a certain process pretty quickly. And then once you have that confirmation that this is your child, like, you want to get to them as quickly as possible. And so we had very little information on him. And that was another, I think, hurdle, specifically on the medical side. We knew he had some special needs. And so we happened to be great friends with our pediatrician. And so we got as much medical information as we could that they would send us. And she kind of went over it with me a little bit. And so we could have a little bit of an expectation of what we were dealing with. So that was another hurdle that we came up on.
Yeah, I think just communication in general, just communication about his medical file, communication even when we were in China. We did have a translator, you know, while we were there, so that helped a lot. But other than that, you know, it was, we didn't speak Mandarin. So, yeah, it was a little bit.
You didn't get that at OBU? You didn't take the Mandarin classes?
Yeah, didn't take that. And you can, the listeners can tell I have a Southern accent. Jonathan really has a Southern accent.
He's from the deep South.
And so hearing him try to say Mandarin words was very amusing. I think our translator, even at times, she's like, I don't know what you say. I think that's mind blowing to people too, that like the first time we met him, you know, here we have agreed, this is our son. The first time we met him was when he was becoming ours in China. And that's a moment that will forever be ingrained in our mind. That little 4.5-year-old boy walking through our door, and he spoke nothing but Mandarin when we first got him, which was insane. We had learned like the basic phrases, but Mandarin is a very hard language. And it was interesting.
But what's funny too, is he was kind of from a province that was a little bit kind of rural, I think. And so even some of his words that he spoke, the translators couldn't really tell what he was saying. She was saying it's some kind of slang for this. So it just kind of was funny. You know, I guess maybe his accent was kind of considered maybe a Southern kind of China accent, I guess. So anyway, I thought that was funny.
Yeah, that makes me think of, we were walking through a market one day and he was so upset about something and he was crying and having just a typical toddler meltdown. And we were trying everything to console him. And we kept asking our translator, don't you know what he's saying? Because he kept saying the same word over and over again. And she was like, I don't know. And finally, this old woman walked up to us. She could tell we were struggling. And she said to our translator, he's saying he's tired. And we were like,
get it together, people. This is what he's trying to tell you.
That's what he's trying to tell us. So that was definitely a hurdle once we had gotten him, for sure.
What were, you guys had mentioned a couple of times, the medical issues were a hurdle. What was going on with Wyatt? What was happening with him that caused more medical attention than a simple attack?
So we had, like I said, very little information. We had 2 or 3 videos of him that we could actually see him physically walking. And one of his legs was inverted pretty substantially. Mm-hmm. And he would literally take 1 or 2 steps and then fall down. I mean, he could not take a lot of steps. He was a preemie. And then there's some other medical information that we had that we let be his story. But our pediatrician had determined that she was pretty confident he'd have a cerebral palsy diagnosis once he came home. And once we got him home, that was in fact his diagnosis after we had an MRI. And then since then, he's also been diagnosed with autism and ADHD. Mm-hmm. So we medically have a lot going on, but that's just part of the God story. And if you saw him now, you would not believe that he's the same kid in that video over in China, which gives me chills. I'll never forget one of his therapists, his physical therapist that we got really close with. And basically kids, their physical movements, they kind of have set in place by 3 years old. You know, they've kind of learned their gait and how they're going to walk and all those kind of things. And so after 3, it kind of becomes hard to undo if anything is not correct. And so she looked at me and she said, Brooke, do you realize that he's a miracle? Mm-hmm. I mean, he is a walking, talking, living, breathing miracle. And I cried this morning already. I'll probably cry out in this talking to you guys at some point, because I just get chills when I think about how far God has taken us in this story. And I literally give him all the glory for it, because Wyatt shouldn't even be here if you know his whole story. And and but yet God showed that he was faithful and that he had a plan for his life.
What has God taught y'all through Wyatt? What are some things that you feel like, just even from adoption till even today, like what are some things that the Lord has taught you through Wyatt?
I think that one of the things is perseverance, because he's been through a lot of physical therapy. And like Brooke was kind of talking about earlier, his gait and kind of, you know, how he would, you know, how he would walk was not, I guess it just needed, he just needed a lot of therapy to kind of correct that. And so through all of this, he has been, you know, a trooper. He hasn't complained, you know, one time about having to get therapy. He's always just a joyful, happy kid. And so I just think that I think that's just God just shining through his life and just, you know, being optimistic and just he's just, you know, able to persevere through a lot of adversity. And so I think he's, you know, a very good example to me, because there's times when I can get pretty pessimistic about life. So I can always look to him, and he's always very encouraging, even, you know, for me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I tell people. You look at this kid that literally had his world turned upside down at 4 and a half. He'd only known orphanage life, and he gets these two white folks looking at him and telling him to call him mom and dad. He had never known what family life looked like before, and moves across, you know, to the other side of the globe and is hearing a whole new language, and then is going to all these doctor's appointments and all these things. And never once was he difficult. He had a huge surgery beginning of this year on his legs, releasing some muscles, and it was just, I get the heebie-jeebies thinking about like what they did, you know, and how painful it should be. And he was just so joyful through the whole thing. And just, when we prayed about Wyatt and we started specifically praying for him, we chose Exodus 14:14 as his life verse. The Lord will fight for you. You need only be still. And I can't tell y'all how much that has been Wyatt's story. The Lord has gone before him every step of the way and prepared, just down to his teachers, his aide, his therapist. Cool little side note, I was terrified when he went to kindergarten. He still to this day, I mean, his speech just from his cerebral palsy is a little off. But back in kindergarten, it really was. And he had gone to a special needs preschool. And so he's one of those kids, he kind of rises to the challenge. Yeah. So we wanted to put him in a mainstream classroom. And through his IEP, we got him qualified for an aide, and he was gonna get a full-time one-on-one aide in the classroom. And so I prayed specifically for an aide that would know when to push him but know when to nurture him. And in walked a sweet lady named Lynn, and she started with him in kindergarten, and her retirement plan is to get Wyatt through fifth grade, and which will be the end of his elementary school journey. And she's been with him every year, and she's just been the biggest blessing to our family, just praying for him. She's a God-fearing lady, and just working with Jonathan and I to get him the best in what he needs education-wise. And I just am so grateful for that God wink, among many others.
He just, it sounds like the Lord just always is going before Wyatt and you guys. Like, he's called you to this, and this is something that he has placed on your heart. Yes, but like, he continues to say, okay, I'm calling you to this, and this is what I'm going to do. I'm going before you.
Yeah. And we talked a little bit about financially, you know, what that looks like. So once we decided to adopt, kind of taking a step back to the beginning of his story, we were like, okay, what do we do here? And literally before we even started fundraising, and I was so hesitant to fundraise because I'm like, when people have a baby, they don't fundraise, you know, but we really were urged by family and friends to do that. And
I think it was a way maybe to kind of get them involved in a way to, you know, get like I said, involved in the journey of, you know, our adoption process. And so for them to kind of be able to see that. And so I think that's one of the reasons why we chose to fundraise.
Right. And we had people literally who would send us a check that we got one check in the mail from somebody we barely knew. And it literally said, I've never been called to adopt, but I feel like this is how the Lord wants me to bless your adoption. And so from people sending in checks to we sold t-shirts and have so many people buy the t-shirts and send us pictures supporting the t-shirts.
We still
and,
wear I still wear mine.
Shirt. So we had friends and family that got together and said, hey, we want to do a chili cook-off. And they threw a chili cook-off and had silent auction. And we got to share our story to hundreds of people that had filled that room before Wyatt came home. And we sold popcorn. We had a popcorn fundraiser and just all these little things. And before we knew it, we were funded and we just stood in awe that God had brought us to that. Mm. Oh, in the garage, we did a huge garage. So that
I wasn't going to bring that up.
Trust the Lord and trust popcorn. That's
right.
It'll bring
sell your stuff. I love it. So what advice would you give anyone listening that who's praying through adoption, specifically overseas adoption too?
Yeah, so I jotted down this quote. I was looking back through some of our memories from our adoption journey, and when Jonathan and I were on a train to go meet Wyatt that very day, I actually was listening to a podcast, one of my favorite podcasts. I just needed to listen to something to kind of chill me out because I was so worked up. And on that podcast, it happened to be about adoption. And I wrote this down and will forever remember it. And the person on the podcast said, sometimes it's just a yes. A risk is a step forward without knowing what two steps forward holds. That's what risk is, but that's also what faith is.
And that's good.
Love that.
I just remember hearing that and being like, yes, Lord, you've been so faithful. And this is where we are. I mean, it was the day we were going to meet our son. We had been waiting for a year to get to that point. And I will say if it feels like it's supposed to happen and you and your spouse are on the same page and y'all prayed through it, God's going to bring you through it. He's just made that evident in our life.
Yeah. That's what we keep hearing in your story, or I do, is just
God's provision, your risk, God's provision, your risk, God's provision. Yeah.
You're such a pastor.
I know. There's so many phrases that have been going through my brain just about this whole journey. Because for me, from a pastoral, theological standpoint, I love y'all's stories, not only because I love you guys and your friends, but it's such a beautiful picture of what God did for us. You know, even the word adoption is used multiple times in the New Testament to talk about the Lord redeeming us. And, you know, on paper, you guys should have never adopted Wyatt. You know, I mean, you knew there was challenges. There was financial challenges, medical challenges. Like, there were so many things that the world would say, nah, don't do this. You have two kids of your own. You've got, you know, and I'm sure y'all heard that, you know, from even people that were close to you. Like, what are you doing? Like, why? This is not a good idea. But love for Wyatt, like, just broke through all those barriers and those conversations. And it just reminds me so often of when I think about your story or when Wyatt's in our front yard. Gosh, I was thinking about just the last time I saw him. I knew the stuff that was going on with him in his past, and he's playing soccer in my front yard and didn't want to leave. Like, y'all were like, all right, we got to go. And he was like, no, I want to keep playing soccer. And so, but just to think about, like, that's what Jesus did for us. He fought through all these barriers that we put up ourselves through sin, through rebellion, and yet the love of God broke through our stories and adopted us into his family. And it is an ongoing issue for God to take care of us, you know, like with you guys. Like, you're always facing new hurdles and new responsibilities with Wyatt. And it's like God's doing the same thing with us. It's like, okay, but I'm not leaving. I'm here. I have purchased you with my blood, and I'm not leaving you. And so for me, the stories of adoption, especially y'all's, it just inspires me and just gives me such a clear picture of what Jesus did for us and is still doing for us. So you guys are inspiring me a lot. And so I appreciate that. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You said it because
that's my sermon.
There you go.
You're such a preacher. Like, well, that's
I know. Well, because I'm not. And so I literally was like, just that I keep hearing that God is faithful. And you were like using your sermon like illustrations and stuff. And I was like, well, he said that better than I can.
I think there's something that I've heard kind of over and over again. Everyone should have some kind of role, whether that be like a financial commitment or just any kind of commitment to adoption.
People that foster, people that support organizations. I mean, there's so many great organizations out there. You know, Stephen Curtis Chapman's a part of our story, and Shohanna's Hope and what they're doing is tremendous. And then even here locally, Jonathan and I are super involved with Project Zero, and we love the work that they do, shooting for zero kids in foster care. And so, yeah, I love that you brought that up, Jonathan. I completely agree. God doesn't call everyone to adopt. And just because you listen to this podcast doesn't mean that he's calling you to adopt, but I think he does call everyone to do something in some way.
That's a good word.
There are so many orphans in the world.
Yes. And I think too, on a even bigger scale, the risk that you guys talked about, the one of the things that I thought about and I've been reading recently is like on the other side of your risk is God's will in someone else's life. You know, so what I'm thinking about honestly with you guys' story is
I like that.
Isn't that powerful? You know, and I can't take credit for that. I read that recently, but it's so true. And what I love about this is God is still writing y'all's story. Like you truly have no idea how what you guys are doing now with Wyatt is going to impact your girls. It's going to impact your grandchildren. Like there's fascinating things that God is going to unlock on the other side of this risk that you guys have taken in someone else's life that you may not even be aware of. Even with this podcast, you know, this may be the final push for somebody to be like, I don't even know who Blake and Joy are, but I came across this podcast and we're going to do it.
Yeah, that was kind of I was a little bit reluctant just sharing our story and kind of opening up just because that's kind of my personality. I'm an introvert and it takes a little bit to drag things out of
me. Very private person.
Yes, but Brooke was kind of explaining to me. She said, yes, that may be true, but think about all the people that we, you know, could impact just by them hearing our story. And, you know, that's kind of one of the ways that Brooke, you know, was called to adoption. Was through the concert that she attended, and so she was really encouraging to do this podcast, just you know, for that. So,
but even look back further than earlier than the concert, your sister and your family members, Brooke, that adopted, like that impacted you at a young age, and so I think it's true what you said, Blake. I mean, your yes. Can not only just like your yes did not only impact your family and Wyatt, but it is going to impact past him and other children who need adoption. Mm-hmm. So I love that. Well, thank y'all so much for joining us today. We have one more question for you because this is The Way is Wild. We always ask, what is your favorite place in the wild?
We would probably, or Jonathan would say, me especially, I'm not a very outdoorsy person. We talked about the ways we complement each other. Jonathan has definitely brought a lot more outdoorsy out of me. We don't have time as much, but he did get us camping there for a while, tent camping, which was a big adventure.
I'm so proud of you, Brooke.
Several times with our kids, and it was chaos, but it was so fun. And what was our favorite place that we camped, would you say?
Lake Catherine.
Was a pretty nice place. We did like Lake Catherine a lot and doing the hiking around there. And that's one of, you know, tying it back to God Winks. I remember we went to the Buffalo, and we have a group of friends that we try to float with every year. and it was raining, and the river was too high and we couldn't float. So we went on a hike, and we thought it was gonna be this like little, like real easy, leisurely hike, and ended up being like
hours.
It was hours.
I could just imagine.
And like all the kids are crying.
A few wrong turns.
All the kids are crying. Like everyone's sweating. We're all out of water. Like it was like, and Chris Wyatt, who literally used to could not take two steps without falling down, he did the whole hike with a smile on his face, like took it like a champ. His sisters are like, I'm dying. Like, let's go, guys. Loved it. You know, and that's just him. So we definitely love getting out and exploring all the places that Arkansas has to offer. But probably our family's happy place for the most part is my grandparents have a family cabin on Gers Ferry. I think y'all have both been there.
Yes, yes.
Before, and that's our favorite place to go in the summer. Again, time, we don't get to go up there as much as we want, but on Gers Ferry Lake is our favorite place in the wild, I think, for sure.
I love it.
I love it. I love that. Well, guys, thank you all so much for taking the time to share with us your story.
Loved catching up with you guys and loved sharing our story. And just love what God has done through Wyatt. And we pray that he continues to impact people, because he sure has impacted us.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm waiting to see what's next with Wyatt and with y'all's story. So we love you guys.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you again for listening to the Way is Wild podcast. We hope today's episode inspired and equipped you to follow the wild way of Jesus. If you love the Way is Wild podcast, please take a quick moment to subscribe and leave a happy review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. And please share this with a friend. If you want more of The Way is Wild, you can visit our website at thewayiswild.com and also sign up for our monthly Inspire letter. Until next time, friends, let's take what we've learned together and follow Jesus into the wild.